You are listening to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagmann.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagmann. That's right, it's the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour for today. It is Friday, October 20th, 2017. Thanks for joining me this morning. I'm going to be taking a broader view of what is taking place all across the United States, all across Canada, anywhere in the West. I'm going to be providing an overview rather than drilling deep down into any one particular issue. We're going to be talking about what's driving what we're seeing right now, what the driving force behind it. And in my opening statement, I want to cite a man named Marcus Tullius Cicero. In his essay, The Traitor, from 40 BC, Rome's Marcus Tullius Cicero wrote the following: "A nation can survive its fools and even its ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known and carries his banner openly. But the traitor moves amongst those within the gates freely, his sly whispers rustling through all the alleys, heard in the very halls of government itself." That's what we're seeing today. It's not the enemy that is at the gate, but it's the enemy that's inside the gates, inside of our countries, respective countries, whether you're listening to this in the United States, Canada, the UK, Australia, and we've got listeners all over the world. This is what is happening. So what is the driving force that we're talking about? Obviously, it's treason. It's a process of taking down our country from within. That's the broader issue that I'm going to be addressing as the program unfolds. But before I do, I was talking about Hillary Clinton yesterday, of course, Uranium One, and how all that is developing. And, of course, Judicial Watch. And I want to make sure people really understand what's taking place here, because this is so critical. There, Judicial Watch has actually received... they won a lawsuit, and the revelation, Judicial Watch stated that the U.S. Department of State admits that it received 2,800 Huma Abedin work-related documents from the FBI that were found on Anthony Weiner's laptop. Now, Huma Abedin was the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's deputy chief of staff, and much more, I'm sure. Weiner, of course, the disgraced former congressman and New York mayoral candidate. Oh, dodged a bullet there, or did you? Who recently pled guilty to transferring obscene material to a minor. By the way, he got 21 months. Abedin kept a nonstate.gov email account that she used repeatedly for government business on Hillary Clinton's email servers. Now, the revelation was produced in a May 5th, 2015 lawsuit Judicial Watch filed against the Department of State. And now Judicial Watch sued after the State Department failed to respond to a March 18th, 2015 FOIA request seeking all emails of official State Department business received or sent by former Deputy Chief of Staff Huma Abedin from January 1st of 09 through February 1st of 2013. Now, in accordance with a court-ordered production of documents, the State Department, their court filing states that the State Department has identified approximately 2,800 work-related documents among the documents provided by the FBI. By December 31st, 2017, the State Department expects to complete its review and production of FBI records. In other words, they want to go to the end of the year before turning anything over. And they're saying, well, you know, some of these might just be duplicates. Don't know. Now, Judicial Watch previously released 20 productions of documents in this very case that shows examples of mishandling of classified information and instances of pay-to-play between the Clinton State Department and the Clinton Foundation. And they also at least 627 emails that were not part of the 55,000 pages of emails that Clinton turned over, and further contradict the statement by Clinton herself that, as far as she knew, all the government emails had been turned over to the department. Incredible. The State Department is processing 100,000 emails Clinton failed to disclose. That's 100,000 emails Clinton failed to disclose when she served as Secretary of State, some of which were emails sent by Obadon that were found on Wiener's laptop. Now, imagine that. We had on our flagship show, on the Hagman Report, a young man who served jail time for simply taking a few pictures in a submarine where he was stationed. They were of exercise equipment, but in the background there was some engineering, some equipment in the background that represented this alleged mishandling of classified information. And he served time for this. And here we have the Secretary of State and her chief of staff, along with this sexual pervert, having emails on unclassified laptops everywhere. Now, you might say, but we knew this. We've known this for years. What's the difference between today and before? And especially as it relates to Hillary, the FBI, the cover-up, the Hillary Obama, FBI cover-up of Hillary Obama, their collusion with Russia. The treason from within is represented, in my view, by the FBI, in two parts, by the conspiracy, the collusion of the FBI to keep all of this secret and to misdirect the investigation. But the other side of it too, what is the media doing? As I talked about in this program, is the long march of communism across our institutions. You've got this, the communist infiltration in our government, in academia. And of course, now, and it's always, it's even more so now in the press. The press, whether it is the New York Times, the Washington Post, or CNN, MSNBC, or even search engines like Google, or the internet framework, they are censoring this information from us. In response to the emails I got about the talking about the Clinton emails and the pay-to-play scandals and what all of this shows, I found an audio video clip of Judge Andrew Napolitano a couple of days ago explaining why this makes a difference today. I'm going to play that for you now. And then from there, hopefully I will have answered, or at least Judge Andrew Napolitano will have answered your questions about the difference this makes. And then from there, as the program progresses, and again, I'd like you to listen to this entire program. I'm going to give you the bigger picture here, because I think drilling down is fine, but understanding the playing field, where the field of battle, so to speak, understanding what is here, what we're dealing with, is so important. Because indeed, a violent revolution is coming, I believe. I believe that there will be a violent revolution. In fact, you know, I mentioned communist infiltration. I mentioned, of course, and I'm kind of drifting away from the emails momentarily, but I'll get back to that. Because the large part of this program is the bigger picture. The communist infiltration in our country. The Communist Party, USA, has a presence, obviously a huge presence in our country, and a very overt one at that. And the Communist Party, USA, itself states the following. The Communist Party of the United States will systematically and persistently propagate the idea of the inevitability of and necessity for violent revolution, and will prepare the workers for armed insurrection as the only means of overthrowing the capitalistic state. That's the Communist Party USA's agenda. or that's her stated purpose. You're not hearing that. But that's what this is all about. And we're seeing, prior to this violent revolution, and I believe we're coming to that point. At some point there will be. I don't know when, but at some point there will be. But meanwhile, we're seeing this rot from within due to this infiltration and treason from within. We're seeing justice denied, or I should say justice not meted out, a multi-tiered justice system or system of justice where the young man who takes a couple of seemingly innocuous photographs is jailed for having this classified information on his cell phone, which, by the way, that story is incredible by itself, but did a hard time. Versus Hillary Clinton, who gives a middle finger, and Huma Abedin, middle finger to the law itself, and by extension to every American and every freedom-loving person and every law-abiding citizen themselves. But I'm going to play right now. Go ahead and play Judge Andrew Napolitano explaining the difference between now and before with respect to the emails and the pay-to-play and the whole gambit. Go ahead and play clip one. And this is Judge Andrew Napolitano from just a couple of days ago.
Now we're going to pull an old chestnut out of the fire. Hillary Clinton still has an email problem. The latest revelation concerns her assistant, Huma Abedin. Her husband, Anthony Weiner. He had 2,800 emails on his computer that came from Huma Abedin, Hillary's assistant. Round and round it goes. Who better to pass judgment than Judge Andrew Napolitano? What's the give me the big picture. The significance, please.
The significance is an FBI acknowledgement that Huma Abedin, Mrs. Anthony Weiner, when she had a top security clearance as the number two assistant to Hillary Clinton when Hillary was Secretary of State, regularly sent copies of sensitive material to her own laptop so she could look at it at night, either knowing or forgetting that her husband had access to it as well. We know of her husband's fate and his jail sentence, right, which has nothing to do with this. It has to do with inappropriate and criminal personal behavior. But this yet again shows the culture in the Hillary Clinton State Department of a cavalier attitude about the handling of government secrets. It also shows the FBI awareness of it. It also shows the president's frustration with it when in a tweet this morning he said, there she goes again, crooked Hillary, Jim Comey let her off the hook again. Something I profoundly agree with him on. He should pick up the phone and call General Kelly and say, I want you to call Jeff Sessions and Rod Rosenstein. Rosenstein's the number two person in the Justice Department. Tell them to reopen this case and go wherever the evidence takes them. I'm not saying she should be indicted. Go where the evidence takes them. The evidence will take them to an indictment.
An indictment of Hillary Clinton?
Yes.
For breaking the law by putting classified material onto an email to Huma?
Yes, and Huma will be a witness against her. That's the way the Justice Department works. They are not bound by the ill-advised, politically motivated decision that James Comey made in the summer of, in July of 2016, not to seek her indictment.
I thought it had all gone away.
So did I. So did we all thought it had gone away. Here's how it came out. In a Freedom of Information Act request by our friends at Judicial Watch, and the FBI coughed it up. And the Freedom Watch lawyers are looking at it and saying, we never saw these emails before. They were not part of the original trove of emails that were released. These are yet more Hillary Clinton emails that we never saw, that she swore under oath three times she had surrendered to the government when apparently she hadn't.
I can't resist bringing Herman into this. Yeah. He's sitting there patiently waiting to go.
Remember Dragnet?
I do. Yeah. We're the only people around this building who remember.
You're dating yourself.
Wait a second.
Just the facts, man.
Hillary won't go away.
No.
She
will not go away. But what this shows, as Judge Napolitano laid out perfectly clear, the cover-up by the Obama administration was very clever until they got thrown under the bus recently with those additional emails. Secondly, that's certainly not going to go away. You have a new administration that wants to expose the corruption and the cover-up. Now, the other part of Hillary going away, you're right. She won't go away because she's looking for relevance. And she's not achieving it the way she thinks she is with all of the things she's saying, all of the attacks, all of the narrative, et cetera. So I happen to believe that when and if the president picks up that phone, the case will be reopened, like Judge says. And it's about time.
Okay. Well, you got it out there, Herman.
Yes,
I'm glad you did.
Well,
and you still got 15 minutes left.
The more she talks, the more the president loves it.
Yes. He's right.
And the GOP.
She's falling right into his narrative.
Yes. And the GOP. You're right.
Yes. Loving it. You're right.
And the Democratic elites are cringing.
Yes.
And that also included the Herman Cain bonus track there. But yes, absolutely. Pay attention to that. Pay attention to what's taking place. And, you know, I should also mention, too, as kind of an addendum to that, Judicial Watch doing great things, Tom Fitton doing great things. They found that they produced or had cause to have produced, and I mentioned this before, but it's relevant to what you just heard, 30 pages of documents related to the June 27th, 2016 tarmac meeting between former Attorney General Loretta Lynch and the former President Bill Clinton. Now, they asked for these documents to be produced forthwith. The new documents are being sent to Judicial Watch in response to a FOIA request, or a lawsuit, I should say, filed after the Justice Department failed to comply with the July 7th, 2016 FOIA request seeking the information. So here we have 30 additional pages. Judicial Watch asked for any documentation. Let me just kind of back up here and just go over this. Judicial Watch asked for documentation relating to the tarmac meeting. The FBI, Department of Justice said, there was none. Nothing. No. Oh, wait. When sued, now they found 30 pages. All right. And of course, that this is consistent with the emails with the Department of State and such. But do you see how deep this traitorous activity is going? You see how deep this corruption is? Do you see how deep-rooted this lawlessness is in the United States? The American people will not put up with this anymore. By the way, there is a significant controversy about whether the FBI and the Obama Justice Department investigation gave Clinton and other witnesses and potential targets preferential treatment. Now, the Obama regime extended numerous immunity agreements, including Clinton's former chief of staff, Cheryl Mills, John Bentel, former director of the State Department's Office of Information Resource Management, Heather Samuelson, Clinton's executive assistant, Brian Pagliano. He was that IT guy at the State Department. But where did he served? He serviced the Clinton home server, non-government server. And he was the employee at Platte River Networks, the company that maintained that server. Now, it's not clear whether Clinton received some type of immunity, but it's interesting. In 2015, and I should mention this again, or in addition to what I've been saying, in 2015, a PAC, a Political Action Committee, run by McAuliffe. All right, Terry McAuliffe, a close friend and political supporter of Bill and Hillary Clinton, donated $500,000 to Jill McCabe, wife of Andrew McCabe, Jill McCabe was running for the Virginia State Senate. Also, the Virginia Democratic Party, over which McAuliffe had significant influence, donated an additional nearly $250,000 to the Jill McCabe campaign. In July 2015, Andrew McCabe was in charge of the FBI's Washington, D.C. field office, which provided the resources, the agents, to the Clinton email investigation. You can't have this. You cannot have that at all. The FBI actually hid the Clinton-Lynch tarmac meeting records. This was not, whoops, I'm sorry, we missed this. They actually ferreted away, hid the Clinton-Lynch tarmac meeting records. Now, you would think that with a new president, President Donald Trump, behavior would change. But the question, and this if you've been following Judicial Watch, for example, and seeing what they're doing, what they're producing, you've got to ask yourself, who's running the store, basically? Who's running things? Because what we're seeing today, and I mentioned this, I think, on the flagship program yesterday, on the Hagman Report, either yesterday or the day before, the fact for example, Judicial Watch requesting records, the blocking of acquiring such records is even greater today than it was under Obama. How is that even possible? And I would stipulate that's because there are there's a level of protection built within the FBI. People, the holdovers, the Clinton loyalists and the Obama loyalists who are still there that haven't been rooted out, that are attempting to block everything that Donald Trump does. And that's, again, this is going to lead us to the crisis of war, basically, internal war. But let me just kind of, with respect to the 30 pages of the Clinton Lynch tarmac meeting documents, at first, the FBI told Judicial Watch they had no documents. I just want to make sure this is clear. They had no documents related to that tarmac meeting between Lynch and Clinton. Now, the FBI, or most recently, the FBI said, oh, yeah, we found the 30 pages related to that June 27th, 2016 meeting. And we'll get it to you. We'll get it to you by November 30th, 6 weeks out or whatever. And that, of course, was, and I want to make sure, just credit Judicial Watch. That was their lawsuit that was filed by Judicial Watch. Now, the FBI, again, they originally informed Judicial Watch that they located no documents relating to the tarmac meeting. But in a related case, the Justice Department located emails in which the Justice Department officials wrote that they had communicated with the FBI. As a consequence to that, by letter dated August 10th of this year, the FBI told Judicial Watch that upon further review, whoops, hey, we found documents to your other request. And because of that, we're going to reopen that FOIA request. Well, isn't that interesting? And what Judicial Watch, what Tom Fitton has been saying, and this is so important, the Trump Justice Department is refusing to disclose the talking points developed by the Obama Justice Department to help it respond to press inquiries about the controversial June 27, 2016 tarmac meeting. They are refusing to disclose. This is the Trump Justice Department. What's going on? Jeff Sessions, who's running things? For those with bad memories, it was June 27th, 2016. Loretta Lynch met privately with Bill Clinton on board a parked private plane at Sky Harbor International Airport in Phoenix. The meeting occurred during an ongoing investigation of Hillary Clinton's email server. And mere hours before the Benghazi report was publicly released, involving both Hillary Clinton and Obama. And Judicial Watch filed a request on June 30th, 3 days later, by the way, that the U.S. Department of Justice Office of the Inspector General investigate that meeting. Of course, remember, the State Department had no active or had no permanent Inspector General at that time. And that was by design, not by accident. Now, the FBI is certainly out of control. It is absolutely stunning that the FBI found those documents, those records, only after Judicial Watch caught the agency hiding them in another lawsuit. They're going to continue to press for answers. I really like them. Tom Fitton does a great job. But there's a significant controversy about whether the FBI and the Obama Justice Department investigation gave Clinton and other witness and potential targets preferential treatment. As I said before, you know, there's a question as to immunity. Meanwhile, you and I would be in jail. How is that even possible? Now, don't forget as well, now, this is interesting, and I want to mention this since I'm on Judicial Watch at this point talking about this. There's The Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the Awan brothers, the Awan clan, the IT scandal, the IT Awan criminal cabal. This is this enemy within that I'm referring to. And as everyone knows that's listening to this broadcast, a man named Imran Awan and his wife and his brother and his brother's wife and a group of others were involved working inside the Congressional House of Representatives, their computer network. And of course, Imran Awan was arrested in July on charges of bank fraud. He was working directly for Debbie Wasserman Schultz and other members of Congress, 80 in total, over the course of a dozen years or so. You talk about infiltration. He's also a suspect now in a cybersecurity investigation. There was an offsite server transfer of tons of information. Despite being banned from congressional networks in February, he continued on Wasserman Schultz's payroll. We know about this. But in fact, Tom Fitton was at a congressional hearing himself. But the question is, who is watching the story here? The House of Representatives not policing itself has left itself susceptible to being defrauded or infiltrated. So, again, who's watching the store? Who's mining? Who's taking over here? This speaks to what, or this really goes to the larger picture I want to address right now with this program, right? I'm addressing with this program today. This is the larger picture. This is what we're seeing. We're seeing treason from within. We're seeing some things play out that are consistent with the communist infiltration I've been talking about for many programs. This is what it's all about. Let's pull the lens back right now. Let's pull the lens back a little bit and take a look at the landscape. Take a look at the battlefield and take a look at really what is taking place. The push for this global governance has not stopped. Hillary Clinton has not gone away, nor will she. Obama has not gone away, nor will he. There are groups such as Indivisible, RevCom, and all these little and not so little revolutionary anarchist style groups all across the country. They're gaining momentum, they're gaining organization, and they're becoming a little bit more formidable than one might like to believe. We're watching this progress, and let's, again, pulling the lens back, you remember the book, The Naked Communist, is written by former FBI agent Cleon Skousen. In that book, there were some 45 separate goals itemized that a socialist communist movement must score in order to take over a nation. Now, don't roll your eyes and say, oh, I've heard this before, or this is old news. But I think it's important, just as the Cicero quote is important, I think this is important to remind people that the United States really has already left many of those signposts in the rearview mirror. As a matter of fact, objects in the rearview mirror are really closer than they appear. That's what I'm saying to you. History is... well, the past is prologue, I suppose. But the goals of a communist movement, as delineated in Cleon Skousen's book, and we know that in 1963, in the goals of the communist movement were read into the congressional record. But just understand the goals of a communist movement. And I'm going to just tick away here a number of them. Capture one or both political parties. Use technical decisions of courts to weaken American institutions. Isn't that what we talked about with Daniel Horowitz? Isn't that interesting? Use technical decisions of courts to weaken American institutions. We see that taking place with precision across America, making, whether it's about the sanctuary cities, the entire United States now is a sanctuary nation thanks to the activism of the judiciary. Infiltrate the press, gain control of book review assignments, very important, editorial writing and policy-making positions. Gain control of key positions in radio, TV, and motion pictures, of course. Control art critics and directors of art museums with plans to promote ugliness and repulsive and meaningless art. Huh. Man, is that... yeah. Break down cultural standards of morality by promoting pornography and obscenity in books, magazines, motion pictures, radio, and TV. I sent a tweet out with the library that that thing reading to children in the library. That repulsive transgendered, I don't even know how to describe it. It's on my Twitter feed, at HagmanPI. That's my personal Twitter feed. And that's child abuse, in my view. But that's what's taking place right now. Present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. Infiltrate churches and replace them with social religion. Oh, my goodness, what are we seeing there? We are seeing the feel-good, happy-clappy kind of Christianity take over this country and coexist everywhere. We must coexist. Let me tell you, I never want to see a coexist. But if you're driving ahead of me, if you're in front of me with a coexist bumper sticker on your car, man, watch out. I'm joking, but not really. Discredit the Bible and emphasize the need for intellectual maturity, which does not need a religious church. Eliminate prayer or any religious expression in schools that violate separation of church and state. Discredit the American Constitution by calling it inadequate, old-fashioned, out of step with modern needs, and a hindrance to cooperation between nations on a worldwide basis. What are we seeing? We're seeing this attack on our Constitution. Support socialist movements to give centralized control over culture, education, social agencies, welfare. Infiltrate and gain control of big business. What did we see under Obama? Transfer some power, some of the powers of arrest from police to social agencies. What have we seen with CPS, Child Protective Services? Treat all behavioral problems as psychiatric disorders, which no one but psychiatrists can understand and treat. What a racket that is. Dominate the psychiatric profession and use mental health laws to give coercive control over those who oppose communist goals. That's right. And discredit the family as an institution. Encourage promiscuity and easy divorce. Boy, I don't even have to opine on any of those. And one that really stuck out to me right now. Create the impression that violence and insurrection are legitimate aspects of American tradition, that students and special interest groups should rise up and use united force to solve economic, political, or social problems. This is what we're seeing today. Antifa, Resist, Indivisible, these groups. This is exactly what we're seeing today. It's part of the communist structure, infrastructure. It was in 2009. That author and commentator Mark Stein spoke about that there were four stages to the loss of freedom. Extremely well put. The first stage is government takes over health care. Once this occurs, government can justify almost any restraint on freedom, including regulating who receives it. If the state cures you, it has a vested interest in preventing your needing treatment in the first place. Now think about that. Especially look what happened or what's going on over in the UK, where the obese and smokers, the National Health Service is going to have to, they're saying, well, we're going to put you at the end of the line if you're going to have surgery at all. If you need surgery, I don't know. If you smoke, nope. You got to be a non-smoker for at least eight weeks and prove it. Or if you're obese, you got to lose weight before we operate. And look, I'm not advocating smoking or advocating obesity. I'm just saying, do you understand now what's coming to America? And stage two, government increasingly regulates personal behavior. Since the state guarantees all of your basic needs, is increasingly comfortable with regulating your behavior, and we're seeing that today. The third stage is to lure people into becoming wards of the state. Once they are dependent, it's only a matter of degree to begin regulating their thoughts as well as their behavior. And the fourth stage is to control dissenting ideas and words by declaring them hate speech or politically incorrect. Boy, is that ever true. Aldous Huxley, in his 1947 Forward to Brave New World, was not really optimistic about the future toward which the yellow brick road was leading. It seems quite possible, he wrote, that the horror of totalitarianism may be upon us within a single century. Now, this is in 1947, mind you. We only have two alternatives to choose from. Either a number of national militarized totalitarianisms having as their root the terror of the atomic bomb and as their consequence the destruction of civilization, or else one supranational totalitarianism called into existence by social chaos resulting from the rapid technological progress in general and the atomic revolution in particular, and developing under the need for efficiency and stability into the welfare tyranny of utopia. Now, you know why I'm so big on history now and so big on books like Crushing the Collective by Charles Sasser and Utopian Road to Hell by William J. Murray? They're stating, they're giving away their playbook. And, you know, what we're seeing today, we've seen the beginning of the descent into total tyranny, into this collective communist state with collectivism. We've seen it for decades, this breakdown, this economic and cultural dry rot that will lead us into just total chaos and ruin us as a nation and as a society. It's just, and you really have to take a look at the bigger picture. Once you understand the larger picture, everything else seems to fall in line and make sense. You know, this kind of brings me to, I was thinking about Daniel Horowitz on our flagship program talking about, and I had mentioned this earlier in this program, talking about the judiciary, really by decree, this one judge, activist judge, essentially making the United States a sanctuary nation. And, oh, by the way, did you see this? There was an illegal alien who from Mexico sent back, deported five different times in this country illegally, embraced by the sanctuary state of California. He was found to be one of the arsonists of the California fires. That's right. I believe that was reported I think it was a Gateway Pundit reported it. It's up on my Twitter feed. But see, the issue of immigration, while I'm talking about the larger picture here, the issue of illegal immigration and why you have to look at why what's taking place in Europe. If you're in Western Europe listening to this, what has been done to you, what they are attempting to do to us here in the United States, they meaning the communists, the collective, the people within the gates, the activist judges, the politicians who are holding with a death grip this illegal immigration issue. Let everyone in. Hey, you're safe here. This is a sanctuary city, sanctuary state. You can't kick them out. How dare you? What's that all about? Well, let me, citing from Charles Sasser's book, Crushing the Collective, I just kind of want to cite from his book, or at least use that. I'm going to give him the citation reference, because he writes about this in his book. And, of course, he references the 1883 poem that appears on this bronze plaque installed in the Statue of Liberty. It embodies the noble sentiment of a melting pot, you know, one of many. Today, the melting pot has become a dumping ground. And a lot of, you're going to hear this in the media, you're going to hear this, especially in the conservative media, where, well, this is to change the voting roles. In other words, you bring the people in and they vote Democrat and we'll just, yes, that's true. But that is surface level thinking, all right? It's more than that. It's more than just the vote. It's the consequence thereof. It's the collapsing of our nation. Don't forget Michael Savage, Borders, Language, and Culture. Any society, basic rules for the survival of any society include a common or accepted language, a shared history, and a sense of community and family. and patriotism, which we see under fire with the NFL in one case. And patriotism, unlike some of the detractors of mine who say, well, you're worshiping an idol, this American flag. No, no, it's respect. It's pride. A feeling, by the way, of similarity and kinship. Modern America has turned multiracial, multilingual, multiethnic, multicultural. Immigrants centered in many large cities refuse to learn English and to accept American history and blend into society. In fact, they openly oppose assimilation. And this is the balkanization, in my view, of America. It's not uncommon to watch illegal immigrants on television protesting in their native languages for their rights. Notably, and think about this, from 1675 until just recently, the native-born population of the United States, about 80% of whom were British or were from British stock, never fell below 85%. According to U.S. Census Bureau recently, legal immigrants into the United States from 1921 to 1970 averaged approximately, well, almost 200,000. It was 195,000 per year. They were screened according to a quota system that emphasized cultural and economic capability or compatibility to the existing U.S. society. In other words, there's a similarity there, a kinship. 9 of every 10 Americans in 1960 were professed Christians. 9 out of every 10 Americans in 1960 traced their ancestry to Europe. Then what happened? It was in 1965 when you had the progressive communist puke president Lyndon Johnson. He signed the Hart-Celler Act, which did away with the quota system in order to make the system fair. Foreign-born people in the United States quadrupled. The Congressional Budget Office revealed that in 2012, 40 million immigrants illegally resided in the United States. 13% of the total population. 40 million. While according to the Immigration and Naturalization Service, an uncounted number of other foreign-born estimated as high as 38 million reside here illegally. Think about those numbers. Researchers for the Center for Immigration Studies estimated the number of legal immigrants may increase to nearly 60 million by 2022. It is projected that white Americans of European ancestry will be a minority in 2022, 23 years. You can call this cultural redistribution. These progressive communist elites commonly reject the idea of this melting pot on the grounds that it's this nativist bigotry against people of different colors, different origins. Okay. Through their sensitivity to treat all cultures as equal, they encourage this multicultural separation within the nation, and they ignore the various dysfunctions and contradictory values. Think about what happened or what's going on in Detroit, in the suburbs of Detroit with the Islamic population, and the Somalians in the Midwest. Now, researchers from the Eagle Forum and the Center for Immigration Studies drew up a profile of current waves of immigrants entering the United States, either legally or illegally. Overall, the influx of the poor from the third world countries were with attendant high rates of illegitimacy, spouse and child abuse, crime and incarceration, whose governments are rooted in social welfare philosophies. They ruled the day, which means that they like big government. They like Obamacare. They want gun control. They want people paying more taxes. There was a recent Pew poll that found that 55% of Hispanics view capitalism as a negative, and that 75% prefer bigger government that provides them more services. This is what we're bringing into the country. This is the dry rot from within. The average household headed by an immigrant uses 41% more welfare benefits. We're talking food, cash, Medicaid, than the average native-headed household. Over half of all immigration households, both legal and illegal, use at least one welfare program. There's not a wall high enough to stop illegal immigrants from sneaking across the border. That was stated by Ann Coulter once. When the reward waiting on the other side is free health care, it's jobs or, you know, driver's licenses free, you know, with no questions asked, college tuition subsidized by American taxpayers. You get the idea. The progressives, the support by this, the illegal immigration, the support for sanctuary cities and states and the sanctuary nation mentality. It's just incredible that the 2016 DNC platform, if you remember, argued that U.S. borders are not open wide enough. Did you hear what I said? Just in 2016, the DNC platform argued that U.S. borders are not open wide enough to ensure, by the way, equal treatment for all Americans regardless of immigration status. You've got to wonder what these people are thinking. I'm not talking about the planners. I'm talking about the robots or the mind-numb people out there who are just saying, well, you know, we embrace you, you know, and you see them on the part and parcel to the Antifa people and the protests and such. And, you know, I mentioned about the arsonist in California. Most criminal aliens are allowed to stay in the United States, even if they are apprehended and convicted of serious crimes. This is what Donald Trump is fighting. Think back or understand that in fiscal 2015, ICE, which is the Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers, released 30,558 criminal aliens inside the United States after their convictions. That was in 2015. ICE, the officers of ICE, released 30,558 criminals inside the United States after they were convicted of crimes. The reality is that unless you commit multiple crimes multiple times, the chances of you being removed from this country, pretty close to zero. Now, that's somewhat changing, but not quick enough. And violence is just surging across the southern border. The general common criminal variety. But there's more. I mean, the terrors coming into the country, the ISIS or Al-Qaeda terrorist networks or MS-13. The FBI said, this is a couple of years ago now, that they're investigating nearly 1,000 cases of potential terrorists residing in the United States, while a number of ISIS terrorists have been killed by U.S. police. The fact that jihadist terrorists are present in America and plotting and committing terrorist acts have become even more evident. Look at the incidents that have taken place over the last couple of years inside America. You know, I submit that many American men are more afraid of violating the PC agenda, being called, you know, a bigot or whatever, than protecting their own families. There's some bizarre sensitivity that's being pushed down our throats. Men are not men anymore. In America, or rarely, I'm not going to use a broad brush, but I'm saying that men are not men anymore. There's this bizarre sensitivity that's being embraced by some of these supposed men. You know, we knew we had a problem when Obama refused to name ISIS as members of, or when Barack Obama refused to name ISIS as Muslims, or equate the two. We knew we had a problem when Obama never missed an opportunity to publicly praise Islam. And he thanked Muslims for building the very fabric of our nation. Can you believe what he said? Explain to me where and how. He said that Islam has been a part of America. American Muslims have made extraordinary contributions to our country. Where? Can he be so ignorant of history that he does not know that not a single mosque was erected in the United States until 1934? That's right. There were no mosques in this country until 1934. And certainly the Muslim population was not in this country until LBJ liberalized the immigration status by signing the Hart-Celler Act in the 60s. And then only after that did large numbers of Muslims arrive. Their presence before totaling fewer than 150,000. What do we have today? Now we've got Islamic refugees now arriving in the United States from hotspots in the Middle East. Their numbers are increasing each year, and the boost to the U.S. Muslim population to almost 7 million. That's right. And they don't assimilate. They're working against society. They're implementing Sharia law. In fact, there was a 2015 poll conducted by the Center for Security Policy revealed that 51% of U.S. Muslims seek Sharia law over the U.S. Constitution. That was 2 years ago. That number is higher. One in four Muslims believes that it's legitimate to use violence to punish those who give offense to Islam. You want to know what's happening to free speech? There it is. You want to know what's coming down the road? There it is. We're already seeing it take place in social networking, Twitter and Facebook, and where you don't do that. Don't criticize. And only 39% believe Muslims in the United States should be subjected to American courts. In other words, that they're brainwashed and they don't know history. And statistics do speak for themselves. While the so-called moderate Muslim community may not actually participate in violent jihad, they don't oppose it. Rarely do you see anyone really opposing it. There's works out there. Dr. Paul Williams has done a number of great works. And as a matter of fact, William Kirkpatrick, Stealth Jihad. I'm just trying to think of others. But that's immigration, or that's the problem we face right now with this takeover from within. And this is this dystopian society in which we are observing right now. We need to fight back. We need to identify and look at the bigger picture here, because the bigger picture is what is important. I think if you don't understand the bigger picture, if you don't understand what's taking place, you're not going to understand the little or the bigger incidents. You're not going to understand the various situations that happen. But right now, we are experiencing class warfare. Thank you so much. Divide and conquer by creating discontent. That, of course, is an Alinsky tactic. And you know, the Alinsky tactics are often referenced, but very, very rarely discussed, or very, very rarely identified. Alinsky delineated 8 levels of control that must be seized in order to create a socialist state, and that's what we're headed to right now. And of course, number one on top is healthcare. Control it, you control the people. Poverty. Poor people are easy to control if they depend on government to provide their livelihood. That's number two. Number three is debt. Increase the national debt to an unsustainable level. And that justifies increasing taxes and thus more government control over individuals. That's number three. And what do we see? What are we seeing take place? By the way, Hillary Clinton offered her 75-page senior thesis at Wellesley College as a tribute to Saul Alinsky. You knew that. Alinsky was the education that was seared into my brain, said Hillary Clinton. That was Obama, actually, who said that. It was the best education I ever had, better than anything I got at Harvard Law School. So, anyway, the debt is third. And four is gun control. That's coming. Restrict the capability of citizens to defend themselves against government incursion. Five is welfare. Control every aspect of life. And that's food, income, housing. And you control life itself. Six is religion. God is a rally point for opponents of socialism. Therefore, renounce him. Destroy him. Education is number seven. You control schools, universities, the media, pop culture, and the internet today. Of course, it didn't exist back then. And you control politics, but see what's happening? Class warfare is the eighth and final Alinsky plank. Divide and conquer by creating discontent. And this is, I stipulate, I submit to you, exactly what Barack Hussein Obama is doing by staying in D.C. He is sowing the seeds of discontent. You know, lying, cheating, anything is permissible to advance the cause and win the prize. To summarize Alinsky's message, don't telegraph your goals, infiltrate the institutions, and subvert them. Moral principles are disposable fictions. The end justifies the means. And never forget that your political goal is always power. A revolutionary organizer must shake up the prevailing pattern of people's lives, agitate, create disenchantment, discontent with current values to produce, if not a passion for change, at least a passive, affirmative, non-challenging climate. People must feel so frustrated, so defeated, so lost, so futureless in the prevailing system that they are willing to let go of the past and change the future. And people who refuse to be converted, they're going to be demonized, punished, neutralized, ridiculed, and finally destroyed. A society becomes ripe for takeover once they give up and drop out. Think back to the many times we've had Paul McGuire on our program talking about the same issues. Boy, I'll tell you what, the Luciferians, Lucifer himself must be laughing his fool head off at the way things are playing out right now. And we're seeing the role, too, of the Cloward-Piven strategy, or the role of Richard Cloward and Francis Fox Piven. You all know that. But the bigger picture here, and I just really want to kind of finish up by saying, understand what we are seeing, why we are seeing it. Understand that we are facing a time like no other. And I think you know that inherently. I think everyone that's walking in, whether it's in the United States or whatever Western country you're listening from, you know that. We've turned a corner. We've turned a huge corner. We're looking right now at, and I hear this all of the time, the word unprecedented, uncharted waters. We don't know what's going to happen next, but we know what the goals are, for example. We know as I started out with the program, I do believe that violent revolution is coming. But we, in parallel to that violent revolution or that agenda or violence, violent uprising is coming. But in parallel to that is this dry rot within our country. You know the players. I don't have to name them for you. Just take a look. People talk about George Soros. I mean, his hand can be found inserted into every area of American politics. Ann Coulter refers to Soros as the Daddy Warbucks of the Democratic Party, by the way. He spends millions to fund phony grassroots left-wing organizations. He's funding MoveOn.org, the Association for Community Organizing for Reform Now, or ACORN, and the ACLU. But these are the organizations that call the shots within the progressive branch or the Democratic Party or the Communist Party. And these are the people we'll be fighting against. Do not think that Barack and Michelle Obama have gone away, that Valerie Jarrett has gone away, that the goals of former weatherman Bill Ayers have been forgotten and Bernadine Dorn have been forgotten. They're pushing right now for exactly what I'm talking about. We will be censored. We will be vilified, nullified, and ultimately destroyed. That's their goal. Hey, thanks for listening. Tune in to the Hagmann Report, our flagship show, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Global Star Radio Network and BTR. If you like this program, please, please tell others about it. Spread around social networking. Also, follow this just by clicking follow on BTR. God bless you. Have a great weekend.
The Doug Hagman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagman Report. Tune in to The Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.